Right. So this time, you guys have really given us a lot to think about.
Yeah.
With these sources.
Absolutely.
About Luke chapters 18 and 19.
Yeah.
Specifically, like verses 18 through 27.
Okay.
We're on the road with Jesus to Jerusalem.
Mm.
And I think our mission here is to kind of look at all of the different people that Jesus meets and interacts with along the way.
That's right. Yeah. And I mean, really, what does it mean to follow Jesus? Like, that's a main question in these passages.
Yeah.
And we're going to see when we dive into these interactions with these different characters, some really surprisingly sharp insights into wealth and faith and who really got what Jesus was talking about.
Right. So, I mean, just to lay out who we're talking about, we've got this rich ruler who has a very pointed question for Jesus.
Right.
We've got this blind beggar who is on the side of the road near Jericho.
Okay.
And then we have Zacchaeus, who's like the chief tax collector.
Yeah. Yes, the chief tax collector. Big man.
And it's amazing how all three of these people interact with Jesus in such different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And we can learn a lot from that. So let's just jump right in to Luke 18.
Let's do it.
And start with this rich ruler.
Okay.
This guy comes to Jesus with this like huge question.
Yeah, he does.
He calls him good teacher and says, what must I do to inherit eternal life?
Huge question. And look at Jesus's immediate response. He says, why do you call me good? No one is good except God alone. Right. It kind of makes you wonder about the ruler's understanding of who Jesus is, right?
Yeah.
Like, was he just saying good teacher as like a polite title? Or did he actually mean something deeper by that?
That's a good point. I mean, it almost feels like Jesus is kind of prompting him to think a little bit more deeply about what he just said. Mm. And then Jesus goes on to list the commandments. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not murder. You shall not steal. You shall not bear false witness. Honor your father and mother.
Yep.
And this ruler seems like very sure of himself when he says, all these I have kept from my youth.
From my youth, he's presenting himself as this guy who's like super committed to the law. And what's really interesting is that our sources suggest that he might not have been like a shady character. Mm. You know, he might not have gained all of his wealth dishonestly.
Right.
So he's like a pious dude. And it's worth pointing out, Luke calls him ruler, archon in the Greek, and that suggests he was a leader, you know, maybe even part of Sanhedrin. So he's got this really high position. So, like, from the outside, he looks like he's...
He checks all the boxes.
He checks all the boxes.
But then Jesus comes in with this, like, super challenging statement. He says, one thing you still lack, sell all that you have and distribute to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven, and come follow me. I mean,
that's a big ask.
It's just like, for a wealthy guy.
Especially for a rich dude.
Yeah, especially for a rich guy,
And the text even says that he became very sad.
Sad.
Because he was so rich.
It's like the heart of the matter, right? Like, it's not just about following these external rules.
Right.
It's about where your heart's allegiance lies.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, where is your treasure? And while Jewish law didn't say you had to sell everything to be a good Jew, Jesus is pointing out the obstacle in this guy's life, right? Like his attachment to his wealth and maybe even like a lack of concern for the poor.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, this is where Jesus comes in with that powerful statement about how hard it is for a rich person to enter the kingdom of God.
It's hard. Yeah.
He uses that analogy of the camel trying to go through the eye of a needle.
Through the eye of a needle. That's it.
And I mean, it's just such a powerful image.
Strong image.
It is, And then so the disciples, they hear this and they're like, whoa, if it's that hard for a rich guy, then who can be saved? And Jesus's answer is so crucial. He says, what is impossible with man is possible with God.
Right.
So he's reminding us that it's not just about our effort. It's about God's grace.
Right.
It's about his power to save.
And it's interesting, too, like right after this, Peter kind of pipes up and he's like, well, we left everything to follow you.
We left everything. Yeah, there's almost like that sense of like, did we do the right thing?
Are we good?
Are we good? Yeah. I mean, that's that's just so human, right?
Yeah.
Like Peter's looking for some reassurance, like, was this sacrifice worth it? And Jesus, you know, being the good teacher that he is, he responds with this promise of a huge reward.
Right.
Both in this life and the next for those who give up everything for his kingdom.
Right.
So it's like a powerful affirmation of their commitment.
Yeah. And I thought it was interesting, too, like one of the sources made this point about, you know, did this ruler really even see Jesus as good teacher?
Right.
If he wasn't willing to actually do what Jesus
wasn't willing to follow.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. Like maybe it was just a surface level kind of compliment. And it makes you wonder if there was this disconnect between, you know, his polite words and actually recognizing Jesus's authority. You know, our sources also point out that while this guy seemed outwardly devout, the real issue wasn't like his rule following.
Right.
It was his internal priorities.
Right.
His love for money was maybe overshadowing his love for God and his love for his neighbor.
Right.
And even his sadness at Jesus' command. Like you could almost see that as this subtle resistance to what Jesus was asking him to do.
Yeah, that's an interesting way to look at that.
Yeah.
So this rich ruler, you know, despite all of his outward, you know, righteousness,
yes,
he can't bring himself to actually follow Jesus.
It's a tough.
Yes.
It's a tough call.
If it means giving up his possessions.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so moving on in the text.
Yeah.
Luke verses 31 through 34.
Okay.
We see that Jesus kind of shifts his focus at this point to his own destiny.
Yes, he does.
Yeah.
Like right after this encounter with the rich ruler, Jesus takes the 12 disciples aside and he tells them straight up, we're going to Jerusalem.
Right.
And everything that's written about the Son of Man by the prophets, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Like he spells it out in detail.
Yeah.
What's going to happen to him. He's going to be betrayed, mocked, mistreated, spat upon, flogged, killed.
He doesn't hold back on any of those details.
No, he doesn't. But then he says, and on the third day, he will rise.
Right. Yeah. And then the very next verse
is
so crazy because it says, but they understood none of these things.
Yeah.
The saying was hidden from them and they did not grasp what was said.
What?
The irony.
So ironic.
So ironic. Like Jesus is being so clear.
So clear.
But his closest followers are totally clueless.
Totally clueless. It's like, how is that even possible?
I know. It's amazing. But Luke is using this like, you know, lack of understanding to set up this amazing contrast.
Yes.
Like while those closest to Jesus don't get it, someone who's totally on the margins is going to show incredible insight and faith.
Right. And that brings us to this blind beggar.
Yes.
Near Jericho.
Near Jericho.
Verses 35 through 43.
Okay.
And it's interesting because Luke places this encounter like right as Jesus is approaching Jericho.
Right at the entrance. Yeah.
Which, and our sources pointed this out, is a slightly different placement than it is in Mark's gospel.
It's a little different. Yeah.
So this blind guy, he's sitting by the road. He's begging.
Right.
He hears all this commotion and he's like, what's going on?
Yeah. What's all the hubbub?
And when he finds out that it's Jesus of Nazareth, he immediately starts yelling, Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me.
Son of David. That's huge.
It's huge, right?
Especially coming from someone who's so dependent on others, like a blind beggar.
Right.
So he's recognizing Jesus's messianic identity.
Right, right.
And the crowd, what do? They try to shut him up.
Right.
Be quiet.
Yeah, it's like they see him as an inconvenience or something.
Yeah, like, don't bother Jesus with this.
He's not important enough.
He's not important enough for this.
But he is persistent.
He is persistent. He keeps yelling even louder.
Right.
Son of David, have mercy on me. Like, come on, this guy's determined.
He's not giving up.
He's not giving up.
And of course, Jesus hears him.
Jesus hears him, yeah.
He stops and he asks for the man to be brought to him.
Right.
And then he asks him this, like, really simple question.
Yeah.
What do you want me to do for you?
I mean, you can imagine you're a blind beggar. Like, the obvious answer is money, right?
Right, yeah. Like, give me some cash.
Give me some cash. Exactly. And our sources even point out that, like, here's the Messiah. Mm. There's a huge crowd.
Right.
It's like a perfect opportunity.
Tax for money.
Tax for money.
Yeah.
But he doesn't.
But instead, he says, Lord, let me recover my sight.
Let me recover my sight. So he wants more than just, like, a temporary physical fix, you know?
Right.
He wants to be completely restored.
And Jesus says to him, recover your sight. Your faith has made you well.
Boom. Instant healing. And it's transformative.
It's instantaneous.
Instantaneous.
Yeah.
And this guy, he immediately starts following Jesus, praising God. And then the whole crowd, they see this and they start praising God too.
Right.
I mean, what a contrast with that rich ruler.
Right. Total opposite.
Total opposite. The rich guy walks away sad.
Yeah.
This guy, he's like on the margins and he gets healed and becomes a follower.
Right.
And he leads others to worship.
Yeah. It's amazing. It's
pretty amazing, yeah.
Too, how our sources pointed out that, you know, even the disciples,
right,
they're right there with Jesus listening to everything he says and they don't understand.
Yeah. Yeah.
But this blind guy, he's never even seen Jesus before.
Yeah.
And he recognizes him as the Messiah.
Recognizes him as the Messiah. Son of David. Like, that's a big deal.
It's a huge statement.
Yeah, it's huge. This guy's got faith.
Yeah. And he doesn't give up.
He doesn't give up. Persistence in prayer, right? Like,
yeah,
that's what Jesus has been talking about.
Yeah.
And this guy embodies it. And it leads to this amazing transformation.
Yeah.
And it leads everyone to worship.
Yeah, it's amazing.
So it's a good reminder that spiritual insight doesn't come from physical sight or social status, right? It's a matter of the heart.
Okay, so let's move on to our third encounter in Jericho.
Okay.
This time it's with Zacchaeus.
Okay, sorry.
Luke 19, verses 1 through 10.
Okay.
So Jesus is passing through Jericho.
Yep.
And we meet this guy, Zacchaeus.
Okay.
Who's a chief tax collector. And the text even tells us he's rich.
So right away, we've got a parallel with the rich ruler, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
They both have wealth.
Yeah.
They both have authority.
Right.
But their interactions with Jesus are going to look totally different.
Right. Okay, so Zacchaeus, he's trying to see Jesus.
He wants to see Jesus, yeah.
But he can't because of the crowd, probably because he's short.
Yeah, maybe he's short. Although one of our sources actually suggested that it could also mean he was young.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
I never thought about that.
So anyway, Zacchaeus, he does something pretty funny.
Yeah.
He runs ahead of the crowd and climbs up a sycamore tree.
He climbs a tree.
He climbs a tree.
Just to see Jesus.
Just to get a glimpse of Jesus. That's awesome, right?
Yeah, it's like he's not even worried about what people are going to think.
Yeah, he doesn't care about his dignity.
Yeah.
He's just determined to see Jesus.
Right.
And when Jesus gets to that spot, he looks up and calls Zacchaeus by name.
Wow.
Zacchaeus, hurry and come down, for I must stay at your house today.
I mean, that's a pretty direct...
It's a personal invitation.
Yeah.
Zacchaeus must have been blown away.
Right.
So Zacchaeus, he climbs down super fast.
Yeah.
And he welcomes Jesus into his house.
Right.
But the crowd, they're not happy.
Right. They start grumbling.
Grumbling, yeah.
They're like, why is Jesus going to this sinner's house?
Yeah. This guy's a sinner. And you got to remember, tax collectors back then.
Right.
They were like the worst.
Yeah.
They were seen as traitors.
Right.
They were collaborating with the Roman Empire.
Right.
Often, they were exploiting their own people.
Right.
For personal gain.
And our sources even pointed out that this wasn't the first time that Jesus had been criticized.
Right.
For eating.
For hanging out.
With tax collectors and other people who were considered.
Yeah, with the outcasts, the sinners.
Yeah, sinners and outcasts.
Yeah.
Okay, so this encounter with Jesus.
Yeah.
It clearly has a big impact on Zacchaeus.
Huge impact.
Because he stands up.
Yeah.
And says, behold, Lord, the half of my goods I give to the poor.
Wow.
And if I have defrauded anyone of anything, I restore it fourfold.
Fourfold. Like, this guy is serious.
Yeah, he's not messing around.
He's not messing around, yeah.
I mean, that's a pretty huge statement.
That's huge. And you notice he doesn't offer to give up everything.
Right.
Like Jesus asked the rich ruler to do.
Right.
But his commitment to give half of his stuff to the poor.
Right.
And to pay back anyone he cheated, like, four times over.
Yeah.
It shows a genuine change of heart.
Right.
And a desire for justice.
And Jesus, he responds with this really powerful statement.
Yeah.
He says, today salvation has come to this house, since he also is a son of Abraham.
Hey.
For the Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost.
So even someone like Zacchaeus, yeah. who is so ostracized,
yeah.
he can receive salvation.
Yeah, it's not about where you come from.
Exactly.
Or what you've done in the past.
It's about that change of heart.
Yeah.
And so this encounter really gives us this amazing contrast
right.
with the rich ruler.
Right.
Right. We've got these two guys, wealthy, in positions of authority.
Yeah.
But the rich ruler, his wealth seems like it was earned. Honestly, Zacchaeus's wealth probably wasn't.
Right.
The rich ruler saw himself as this law-abiding citizen.
Right.
Zacchaeus was a social outcast.
Right.
The rich ruler, we don't even know his name.
Right.
Zacchaeus's name like three times in the story.
Right.
The rich ruler tries to justify himself.
Right.
Zacchaeus, he's willing to change.
Yeah.
And the rich ruler, his obstacle is his wealth.
Right.
Zacchaeus's obstacle is the crowd, maybe because he's short, maybe because he's young. And ultimately, for Zacchaeus, salvation comes right then and there.
It's instantaneous.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, it's not about your outward status.
Yeah, it's about the heart.
It's about what's in your heart.
The heart, that's where it's at.
And your willingness to respond to Jesus.
Absolutely.
Okay, so now Jesus is getting closer to Jerusalem.
He's getting closer.
And there's this, like, anticipation.
Yeah.
That the kingdom of God is about to appear.
It's about to happen.
Yeah, it's going to happen now.
Yeah.
So right after this encounter with Zacchaeus.
Okay.
Jesus tells this parable.
Yes.
Of the 10 minas.
The 10 minas.
Okay. This is in Luke 19.
Yep.
Verses 11 through 27.
Okay.
And this parable is all about what it means to wait for the kingdom.
Okay.
And what it means to be faithful.
All right. So break it down for me. What happens in this parable?
Okay. So there's this nobleman.
Okay.
And he's going to a far country.
All right.
To receive a kingdom.
Okay.
And he's going to come back. But before he goes, he gives 10 of his servants.
Okay.
A mina each.
Okay.
To invest.
All right.
So they're supposed to, like, do something with this money.
Okay. So he's entrusting them with something.
Right.
Okay.
But the nobleman's own people, they hated him.
Oh, wow.
And they sent a delegation to say, we don't want this guy to be our king.
We reject him.
Yeah, we reject him.
So there's this opposition
right.
to his rule.
Right.
Okay, so what happens next?
So he goes away. He gets his kingdom. He comes back.
Okay.
And he calls his servants together.
All right.
And says, okay, what did you do with the money?
It's time for the accounting.
Right.
All right.
So two of the servants.
Okay.
They've made money.
Okay.
One of them has made 10 minas.
Wow.
And the other one's made 5.
So they've multiplied what they were given.
Right, right. And they get rewarded, like, big time.
Yeah.
If they're put in charge of cities.
They're given authority.
Yeah. But then there's this third servant. And he just comes in with his one mina.
He didn't do anything.
Yeah, he just kept it hidden.
He buried it in the ground.
Yeah, he's like, I was afraid of you, master.
Oh, wow.
Because you're a hard man.
You're a hard man. So he's got this, like, this negative view of his master.
Right.
And it doesn't go well for him.
It does not.
What happens?
He gets rebuked.
Yeah.
And they take his mina away from him.
And they give it to the guy who made 10 minas.
Yeah. And the nobleman was like, to everyone who has, more will be given.
Wow.
But from the one who has not, even what he has will be taken away.
That's powerful.
Right.
Like, God gives us these resources.
Right.
He expects us to be responsible with them.
Right, right.
He wants us to be active.
And it's interesting, too, like, the end of this parable, he talks about the nobleman's enemies, the ones who rejected him.
Right.
They get brought in.
Yeah.
And they're executed.
So there are consequences for rejecting his authority.
And our sources, you know, they made some interesting points about this parable.
Yeah, what did they say?
They said it's about, you know, this anticipation
right.
that people had for Jesus coming and for the coming of his kingdom.
And it's also about our responsibility
right.
to use what God gives us. We can't just sit on it.
Yeah, we can't be afraid.
We gotta be active.
Yeah.
And also, we can't have this, like, fearful,
right.
negative attitude towards God.
We have to see him as the good king that he is.
One who's going to reward us for our faithfulness.
Right. And then, you know, ultimately it talks about that final judgment that's coming.
Yeah.
So as we think about all of these encounters.
Yeah.
The rich ruler who can't let go of his wealth.
Right.
The blind beggar who immediately believes.
Yeah, in faith.
And Zacchaeus, who's so generous.
Yeah.
Yeah. What are some of the big takeaways that you see?
Well, I mean, it's pretty clear, right? Like, true discipleship
doesn't
depend on money or social status.
Right.
You know, faith, it can bloom the most unexpected places.
Yeah, even in the heart of a blind beggar.
Even in the heart of a blind beggar.
Yeah.
And how we view our possessions and how we treat those that society often overlooks.
Right.
I mean, that matters a lot to God.
And Zacchaeus, I mean, despite his past, he's willing to change.
Yeah.
And that leads to his salvation.
It does.
While the rich ruler, he's so focused on his outward piety.
Yeah.
But he can't get past.
He just can't get past that wealth.
His attachment to his possessions.
Yeah.
So this has been a really great look at these passages in Luke.
Yeah, it's been a good one.
And as we think about these encounters and what our sources said, I want to ask you, the listener, what's holding you back?
What's holding you back?
From truly following Jesus.
That's a good question.
Is it your attachment to stuff? Are you worried about what other people think?
Right.
Are you full of pride?
Or something else.
Or something else, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, these stories in Luke, they really give us a lot to think about.
They do, yeah. It's amazing how relevant these ancient texts still are.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we've just scratched the surface.
Absolutely.
There's so much more.
So much more to explore.
To dive into.
Yeah, it's exciting.
So keep digging, keep exploring.
Yeah, keep digging, keep exploring.